Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, a show where we speak to the top thought leaders in health innovation, health policy, care delivery, and the great minds who are shaping the healthcare of the future. This week, Mark and Margaret speak with Marilyn Serafini, director of the Health Policy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. They've just released an in-depth look at voter attitudes around health policy, focusing on voters in early polling states in the 2020 presidential election. The poll showed a majority of voters from both parties favor fixing the current healthcare system rather than a dramatic overhaul like Medicare for All. Lori Robertson also checks in. The managing editor of FactCheck.org looks at misstatements spoken about health policy in the public domain, separating the fake from the facts. And we end with a bright idea that's improving health and well-being in everyday lives. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also hear us by asking Alexa to play the program Conversations on Healthcare. Now, stay tuned for our interview with the Bipartisan Policy Center's Marilyn Serafini here on Conversations on Healthcare.
We're speaking today with Marilyn Serafini. She's the director of the Health Policy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, whose mission is to develop policies to improve the nation's health outcomes and reduce preventable healthcare costs. An award-winning journalist, Ms. Serafini was senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News and senior reporter for Congress Daily. Marilyn, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thanks very much. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and you know, we've just had the opportunity. We were just saying a minute ago how much we love this type of year.
Yep.
All the polls are coming out. It's election season. And we love the work that you do at the Bipartisan Policy Center. And you've released this report in advance of the 2020 presidential election, and your survey was done in conjunction with Morning Consult, a group that we follow
Correct.
As well, which sought to identify where voters in early polling states stand on health policy and other issues. And I'm wondering if you could just share with us what important trends do you see emerging in the 2020 presidential cycle?
Absolutely. Well, the most important trend is that healthcare is at the top of everybody's list. Normally in elections, we see the economy right up there at the top, and healthcare is usually a top three issue. But our poll showed that healthcare is the number one issue. Now, do we know for sure that everyone is going to now go to the polls and place their votes based only on healthcare? That's not really realistic. But we do know that this is the top of voters' minds. We know that they're super concerned about healthcare costs. In particular, they mentioned prescription drug costs, soaring prescription drug costs, and they're concerned. So we do expect to see this play out in the elections. We certainly know that it will highlight these issues during the campaign. And one of the most interesting findings was that people want to improve the current healthcare system. The top pick, when we asked voters, are you, do you prefer a Medicare for All style, single payer approach, such as Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are promoting? Do you want to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, such as President Trump has been talking about and other Republicans? Or would you like to improve the current healthcare system? And twice as many voters said they wanted to improve the healthcare system than said they either wanted to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act or to go with a transform to a Medicare for All style system. It's a little bit different when you look at the breakout by parties. For example, Democrats and independents, absolutely. They were all for improving the current healthcare system, even ahead of Medicare for All. And Republicans, while they favored repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, still a third of them said that their top choice was to improve the current healthcare system.
Well, it doesn't surprise me really that it was at the top of their list because it's one thing everybody has an experience of, right? They have an experience of getting healthcare and they have an experience of paying for it. But I'm really curious about this majority would rather see efforts to fix the current health system. I always wonder, what are people talking about when they say fix the system, such as let's not have Medicare for All, let's just improve the system? Are they really thinking about improving health care, or are they thinking about improving how we pay for healthcare. And I'm curious whether you were able to tease out any of that in your polls, because they really are kind of two very different things.
Indeed. Well, we didn't ask them that question specifically, but in everything that we're doing, it feels absolutely like voters are talking about both of these things. We know that they're concerned about healthcare costs. We also know that they are concerned about what they're seeing in their communities. We did ask voters, what health problems are you seeing in your communities? Uh-huh. And the number one issue that they named was opioids, illicit drugs. Mm-hmm. They also were very concerned about mental and behavioral health care.
Yep. Yeah.
We were actually a little bit surprised that they came up as high as it did in the poll, but this is a big concern. It's the number two concern for these voters. And then it was followed by smoking and vaping, which of course is big news, and then by obesity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think those are the conversations that we're hearing our friends, families, and neighbors talk about at the kitchen table. I think they're really talking about the experiences that people are seeing in their own community, in their own families, certainly the opioid crisis. We've had somebody on talking about these deaths of despair, right? Suicide, opioids, and the like that are really challenging families and challenging the health system. You broke it out nicely in terms of there were sort of equal numbers of folks who were either for repealing the Affordable Care Act or for moving to a Medicare for All. Any sense of the intensity of commitment to those? Because sometimes those at 23 and 24% can drive the whole conversation. Even though they were against modifying the system, whether or not those folks were really intent on voting, how much were they motivated by those?
Look, it's a really good question. And, you know, we've been traveling around the country for different projects that we're doing on rural health and mental health. And as we're talking to people, we hear the people who are adamant about Medicare for All, they are truly adamant. I just had this conversation with my niece yesterday. She's 29 years old, and she believes so strongly about this. And this is the one thing that proponents of a Medicare for All style system do. They do energize the far left liberal base. You know, this is not a new approach. This is not a new policy proposal. We have been seeing this for decades. Mm-hmm. But right now, we've got two major candidates who are talking about this as the solution. And people are so frustrated with the current healthcare system that I truly believe that people, those who support it, are truly supporting it. That said, we know that the Republicans did very well in the last couple of elections on their vows to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But here's something else we know. Those people who have insurance, they're happy with it, especially those who have employer coverage. It's a little more affordable for them. It's very different than the people who have individual coverage and they're buying it on their own in the marketplaces that were created by the Affordable Care Act. Also, many people are very happy with the insurance rules that the Affordable Care Act created.
They don't give a lot of credit for it to the Affordable Care Act, but they're very happy with it.
Well, that's exactly right. They don't want to be faced with pre-existing conditions again. They don't want that to either raise their prices to astronomical levels, or they don't want to be excluded altogether from getting insurance or having their, say, breast cancer or cancer, you know, carved out of their insurance coverage. They don't want to have these, you know, unlimited maximums for what they pay. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are many parts of the Affordable Care Act they're really happy with. They're just very concerned about the price of healthcare. And this is what has been driving efforts for health reform for as long as I've been doing this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Marilyn, I found it interesting that your poll focused on some of the early caucus states, right? Like Iowa and New Hampshire and also South Carolina, which are largely rural. And the rural areas really have a particular set of challenges. They've been hit very hard economically. They've been hit very hard by the opioid crisis, but they also face particular issues around access just by geography, where health professionals tend to practice. And I think a real loss of some of the smaller community hospitals that traditionally were both economic forces in their community, but they also were a source of healthcare. What did your polls reveal about the rural voting population? Was there a difference between their more urban counterparts, or did you pick up nuances there about people whose experience of healthcare may be very different?
Right. When we decided to do this poll, the poll is a national poll, but we oversampled in three early primary states because we wanted an early look into what early primary voters, what was important to them. And we were interested to see whether that would set a tone for the rest of the country. Then we're picking out our early primary states, and we see that all three of them, New Hampshire, Iowa, and South Carolina, are very rural states. When we asked about the difficulties with healthcare, we expected to hear things like, I have to travel too far to see a doctor. There are not enough medical providers in my area. My hospital is closing or has closed. But actually, these were relatively low down on the list.
Interesting.
And it surprised us. But I think what that tells us is that healthcare costs and coverage are still just really driving this for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're not important in rural areas, but this is what's driving any effort to do anything about healthcare right now. The only differences that we found in between rural areas and urban and suburban were that in New Hampshire, we saw an enormous response to opioids when we ask them what are the problems you're seeing in the communities. And their response was so much greater than we saw for either the national finding or in Iowa or South Carolina. Iowa, on the other hand, had a very large finding for mental and behavioral health care for what they're seeing. It was the top issue for what they're seeing in their community.
We're speaking today with Marilyn Serafini, director of the Health Policy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and it was very clear that there is bipartisan support on one major issue, that the cost of healthcare is really digging into people's wallets. And so that cost of drugs, the cost of insurance, these out-of-pocket expenses really are also animating lots of the conversations that we hear, and then I know your survey picked up. Tell us, though, how is this translating into what voters want from their candidates, from their policymakers, on how to address the healthcare cost? They all seem to have sort of a little different spin on it. What do you think the candidates are missing here in the conversation?
Well, I think that the candidates, the candidates have been focusing quite a bit on what is the name of the approach? Is it Medicare for all? Is it repealing the Affordable Care Act? Is it a public option so that there is some sense of, you know, Medicare for all, but it's a small, it's a portion of the approach. But we're not focusing as much on the issues that really matter to voters. We are hearing, as part of those discussions, the candidates talk about costs. We are hearing them talk more about prescription drug costs. Mm-hmm. But we saw in this poll, for example, that the voters have a very strong interest and concern for mental and behavioral health care and what's happening there. There is an enormous problem with our workforce, our healthcare workforce, and in particular in having access to services for behavioral and mental health. And some of this is opioids, and some of this is depression and schizophrenia and anxiety, whatever it is. We're not hearing candidates talking about that. We are hearing them talking about rural health care. In fact, each candidate does have a plan for rural health care. But that happened early on, and we're not hearing as much discussion of that right now. We've got small hospitals closing in rural areas.
Right.
We've got some hospitals that have one day of cash left. And some of these people are at risk, at great risk, for losing their hospital. And it's not so much that these people need a rural hospital, but they need some health care in their community.
Well, this is so fascinating because we know that mental health and behavioral health services and substance abuse treatment services are affecting just about every family in America. But You know, we're also hearing a lot of other issues of concern on people's minds. And I know you were looking specifically at healthcare. And we are certainly hearing about the economy, particularly for those people Indeed. Who aren't college graduates. Climate change. We hear mm-hmm. about this, whether it's yeah. staff or community members. That is galvanizing people. Gun control, big issue, depending on where yes. you live in the country, maybe with different right. Feelings. But also women's health, and certainly that is caught up Mm-hmm. in some of the changes that people are looking to see. We're really curious, did this emerge in these conversations? Because they do seem to us to be something part of the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, one thing to remember is that very few voters are single issue voters.
Right.
And specifically, we ask them, what are your top three concerns?
Uh-huh.
Because we know that voters aren't just concerned about health. Look, the economy is pretty strong right now.
Right.
When the economy is not strong, that's when we see the economy at the top of the list for all voters. But let me get into the breakdown just a little bit, because mm-hmm. healthcare absolutely was the top issue for the Democratic and the independent respondents. For the Republicans, healthcare was the third issue. The first issue for Republicans was the economy, and it was followed closely by immigration. Huh. So these are the top two issues for the Republican respondents, yet they still had a fairly strong showing for healthcare. Now, we also saw that there was definitely concern for environmental policies, gun control, taxes, but none of them came as close to healthcare number one, the economy number two, and immigration number three.
Well, you know, we've been following the work of the Bipartisan Policy Center for a long time now, and are really excited about how you think about translating information like this and sort of what your next step as you think about how you're going to continue to cultivate bipartisan support as we go forward in the 2020 election cycle. What's next on your agenda as you translate this information?
Well, as you well know, bipartisanship is a tough order.
Yeah.
So people ask us this question all the time. You know, how do you achieve bipartisanship? How do you do this? And this is one of the reasons why we conducted the poll. But we have a big report that we're going to be releasing, but this project we've been working on is the future of healthcare. And we pulled together a bipartisan group of 10 of the nation's leading healthcare experts, 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans. And the effort is led by former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle and former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, a Democrat and a Republican. Also, Gail Walensky and Andy Slavitt, who are both former Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services administrators. So these are really top level people. And the recommendations in this report will not be Medicare for all, and they will not be repealing and replacing, but we will be coming right down the center, and it'll be a very pragmatic report for improving the current healthcare system, the system that we have right now. A lot of the focus will be on reducing costs for people and the government and ensuring competition in markets. The bottom line here is that if we can pull together 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans who normally would agree on pretty much nothing. If we can do this, get them to sit down and talk to each other and to agree on a set of recommendations for moving forward, then we think policymakers can do that too.
Yeah.
Great. Well, we look forward to that report.
Yeah,
and we've been speaking today with Marilyn Serafini. She's the director of the Health Policy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. And you can learn more about her work and access this poll by going to bipartisanpolicy.org. You can also follow them on Twitter at @BPC_bipartisan or at Marilyn Serafini. Marilyn, we want to thank you for this very insightful analysis, for the work that you continue to do to foster bipartisanship in American politics. And thank you so much for joining us on Conversations on Healthcare today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
At
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Through a TV ad and Twitter, Democratic presidential candidate Mike Bloomberg and President Donald Trump are arguing about Trump's actions on pre-existing medical conditions. Bloomberg charged in an ad that Trump had broken a promise to protect those with pre-existing conditions. Trump fired back on Twitter, quote, "I was the person who saved pre-existing conditions." In fact, Trump-backed Republican plans that would have weakened the protections in the Affordable Care Act. Under the ACA, insurers can't deny coverage or charge more based on health status. Those provisions of the law have primarily affected the individual market, where those without insurance through an employer or a government program such as Medicaid buy their own policies. Before the ACA, premiums on the individual market were often set based on health status, and coverage could be denied entirely. The Republican repeal and replace bills debated in 2017 did include some of the ACA protections, but not all of them. In particular, the GOP plans could have caused some with medical conditions to pay higher premiums. The Trump administration also has backed a court case arguing the ACA is unconstitutional. In a 2018 letter, then Attorney General Jeff Sessions said if the case were successful, ACA provisions regarding pre-existing condition protections would need to be eliminated. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Over the past few decades, kids have been getting less and less physical activity throughout the school day. Phys ed has become less prevalent in many schools. The University of Michigan researchers wanted to find a creative and effective solution that would increase kids' movement without disrupting the school day.
We looked at the scientific literature in terms of prolonged sitting. If you just 2 minutes of activity, a small burst, get up, do some movements, activity in that small of a dose can have dramatic improvements on health, on cognition, on learning. So we decided to develop an intervention, a program that would allow children to get these small bursts of activity throughout the day.
Dr. Rebecca Hassan is principal investigator for IMPACT, Interruption of Prolonged Sitting with Activity.
We typically see in PE or recess lower participation in girls compared to boys, but in classroom activity breaks, you actually see similar rates of participation, if not higher rates of participation in girls. We also saw that for children who are carrying a few extra pounds, that those children also were exercising at a high intensity, even children with asthma.
They wanted to design the intervention that would be easy for teachers to adopt and manage. So they created videos designed to get kids moving quickly.
We created a compendium of 200 activity breaks that are just 3 minutes long. So the teachers had a variety of different types of activities, whether it was jumping jacks, leapfrogs, something that will get their heart rate in the target heart zone.
Kids burned on average about 150 more calories per day, and at the end of the week had accrued a significant amount of physical activity.
We had these little accelerometers. They measure movement at the hip, and so it tells us how many calories were the kids burning away from the laboratory and how much physical activity were they getting.
A low-cost, easily adoptable fitness intervention for kids, allowing short bursts of physical activity throughout the school day. Enhancing fitness, positively impacting the learning experience. Now that's a bright idea. You've been listening to Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare is recorded at WESU, at Wesleyan University, streaming live at chcradio.com,
iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We love hearing from you. The show is brought to you by the Community Health Center.